We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
This is tipped to open ice by Cousins. Cousins in behind the defense, scores! Shorthanded goal for Dylan Cousins. Ties the game at one. Scores! His first of his career! Down the right side, Samuelsson lets it go, and he is bouncing against the glass. As Samuelsson finally gets goal number one of his career. Cousins skates ahead of him. Far circle shot stopped by Nedeljkovic, and the rebound comes to Paterka. For Cousins with a shot, scores! The fun line is having some fun in Detroit City as Dylan Cousins gets his second of the night. Thompson's one-timer. Oh, and that hit Sider, and he is down to hit him in the knee. As he grabs the knee with a play in the far post, it's in. I think that's a goal. We're going to have to wait and see.
It is a goal.
It is Jack Quinn in the shootout, and he can shoot him. Quinn to the right circle. Here's Quinn, holds it. He's going to score! Quinn got to the front of the net and held it just enough while he kept moving. The Sabres win it in a shootout.
Through the hard way for the Sabres last night as they bounced back from a tough ending to period number three and now take a win into tonight's matchup against the Avalanche. Welcome into Sabres Live with Marty. I'm Brian. It was a challenge, Marty, a very daunting challenge given that they not only surrendered a 4-1 lead, they compounded it by sending half their defense corps to the penalty box in the final 6 minutes, including Dahlin and Samuelsson basically off for, you know, at the same time for a 5-on-3 for Detroit. It is honestly almost unbelievable that this team has salvaged 3 points from the last two games. I still can't believe they survived the power puck over the glass against Tampa to get 1 point. And I have no way of ever believing that they survived the 5-on-3 last night in the late stages after, you know, going from 4-1 up to 4-4.
Detroit went 0-for-7 on the power play last night, Duffer, and they had 20 shot attempts, 9 scoring chances on those 20 shot attempts, like on the 7 power play. I felt like they were right around it. Like pucks were just sliding off the post, right? It was like deflection off the post, deflection off the side of the post. I was yelling at my TV last night on the 5-on-3 because, first of all, what we saw against Tampa Bay, and Don Granato said, like, we backed off. And I'm thinking, like, I know it's 5-on-3, but every time Perron or whoever got the puck, everybody just kind of stood still and backed off. And I'm like, you're doing it again. I know it's 5-on-3, but learn the lesson. You're doing it again. Now, they saved it. It went through a shootout. Everything was good. But I was really worried, and it's pretty incredible that they're 2-1-1 in their last four.
3-1-1.
Sorry. Yes. Because of the win last night. And they find themselves, as you just pointed out, getting 3 points in the last two games when you're thinking you're in control of the game. That should have been a 4.2 game effort. You're in control of both games. And also it could have been a 0 point over two games because of how it turned out, how you were able to let it slip. So I'm confused. I really don't have the right words to describe how this last two games felt. But I guess finding a way in the end is all that you can come up with.
Yeah, I really didn't like their start last night. That was disappointing. their first couple of shifts and then falling behind 1-0. That I get it. It's only a minor part of the game. I was just really disappointed with how they came out of the blocks last night.
And you look at the game. So against Tampa, I didn't think Brian Elliott was that great in that. I didn't think UPL was that good either. But last night, they got like some saves from Craig Anderson. And without like a few of those saves, you're thinking this is a sinking ship, right? Like at moments where they needed it. Wow. Like I thought Andy was really, really good. And it was funny. The Sabres social media team on Twitter put a video of when Anderson made the glove save and Matthias Samuelsson puts his glove over his face and he's kind of, you see the shoulders going like, oh my God, I can't believe he made that save. He's like having it, enjoying the moment, right? Mm-hmm. More than anybody else. So that was, and really Nedeljkovic had a tough start. Now he recovered late and made some saves, but there's a couple of those goals. I just can't go in. And so again, finding a way. That's all I can come up with, finding a way.
Yeah, I mean, it evens out for all the complaints that Buffalo fans have had about needing a save. Detroit certainly didn't provide that for their fans last night. And yes, Derek Lalonde can be happy that his team came back from 3 goals down. But if he's not second-guessing his decision to go with Nedeljkovic instead of Husso last night, then I'd be shocked.
Especially because that gave the Sabres life. Like you said, Detroit started good, and then all of a sudden you get, you know, Cousins shorthanded goal, and then you get Matthias Samuelsson goal, which is a wrist shot from 10 feet inside the blue line, really. Like, I don't see how that should go in. And then all of a sudden, Sabres are feeling, hey, we're doing good now. We're up 2-1, even though we had a tough start. So that, to me, is really the big difference.
I just saw
the video.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we can get the audio from that goal from the TNT broadcast. Darren Pang's call.
Oh yeah,
and interrupting Brendan Burke is really funny because it was how I felt last year working with Don Stevens on a tough goal that Luukkonen gave up, where like before Don could even say scores, the commentary was well in place, and Panger knew right away. Was like, oh my God, that's terrible. Like it can't.
Well,
like
you know what he said. So he goes, Panger's talking, and then Brandenburg goes, and now Samuelsson, and then you heard, oh no, that's really like that was as simple as that, because Panger's on the ice level and he sees the shot and he's actually on the Detroit Red Wings bench, and he goes, oh no. And I wonder what the reaction from everybody else that's along Panger, if they had the same reaction, like, oh my gosh, that can't go in, right? But it was simple and to the fact. So here's a something that throughout the game I was concerned about when it comes to the Sabres and how they were defending, is the amount of deflections and screenshots that Detroit were able to get. Like I felt like Craig Anderson had a tough time seeing the puck, especially like on the power plays, because they had a really solid net front presence. So I pulled up a couple of numbers this morning, Duffer, and I know you like to put him in perspective with the league. So last night, 40%, and this is only even strength. Let's not even look at power play. 40% of the even strength shot on net for Detroit were screenshots. Okay. The average this year in the NHL is 17%. 40% of the shots on goal were screened. That is an issue for me. Like, to be able to, like, there was so many deflections, so many screens. Like, you got to be able to do it. And the more Detroit kept coming, the more screenshots and deflections happened. That is a big issue for me in moving forward from last night's game.
So how are they to negate that?
Well, you got to be, number one, you got to front shots higher in the zone, right? So you got to block a few more shots. You got to front them, not allow them to be able to take that shot. Number two, not that I want more like physicality cross-check, but you have to establish position in front of the net. You have to box out. And boxing out comes from being aggressive and being confident that, hey, I see where the player is trying to do. I'm going to meet him on the outskirt of the post so that they don't get to the front. Mm-hmm. And that, again, comes from confidence, comes from recognition and hockey IQ. Yeah. And as soon as things start unraveling, what you usually do is you sit and you say, I'm just going to take care of my little 5x5 area here. But you're not thinking outside of that. You're not thinking as a five-man unit. You're not thinking of what is around you. Your peripheral vision becomes very, very centrified. Like it's, you lose all of that recognition around you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the last two games, because of that pressure of, oh my gosh, the other team's coming back. The other team's coming back. You have to be able to recognize that, breathe, and just recognize it before it happens.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's what are the numbers? What are the Sabres numbers on the season, though, as far as allowing screenshots?
Okay. So as far as allowing screenshots, I wasn't able
like
to
you
find
said it,
it
was last. You said it was high last night. I'd be curious to know where it is season wide and whether that's part of the problem. I wouldn't be surprised now that you're saying it, that it is part of the problem, but I also don't want to dwell on the problem. They won the game. I'd like to get to the positives.
You know what is interesting? Because I'm looking right now because I didn't find it. Mm-hmm. And I like how you challenge me, Duffer. You challenge me to find answers. You know what? Even strength shot against that our screen, they're fifth in the league at only 15%. So they've been doing a really good job of not allowing screenshots overall this season. So again, like I was more looking at what happened last night compared to the league average, mm-hmm. but the Sabres, like for the season, have been really good in top five in that category.
Well, it's a certainly noteworthy observation with statistical backup based on the first goal by Detroit last night. Like Panger was instantly talking about the layers of screens in front of Anderson and the little expectation he had that a save was to be made in that situation. Buffalo was able to bounce back with goals from Cousins and Samuelson, as you know, but and thankfully so, because you give up a goal in the first 90 seconds after a glorious break on the very first shift. Was it not Sundqvist on the first shift too?
I think it was. He had a monster of a game, I thought.
Yeah, it was Sundqvist stopped on the 2-on-1, and then after that they went behind on the Bergeron goal. Dylan Cousins is probably, I mean, all due respect to Matias Samuelson and fun to see him get his first goal, but we've already belabored the point that it was an awful goal, and hopefully someday Matias scores a really beautiful one.
They don't ask you how, they ask you how many, and he got his first one.
Well, so, okay, I had a feeling that phrase was going to come up tonight, and all I could think of entering today was, you know what, Marty? I'm going to ask how. Like, how this, they scored five and they got 2 points, but I'm going to ask how and not how many, because this is the type of game that leads you down that path. It leaves you with as many questions as answers, right?
Yes.
Because there was just so much going on. But we must remove ourselves, even if temporarily, and recognize that it is just the way the game is.
Yeah.
And people need the league-wide game, that is. And we need to stop wide brushing with the commentary after two games. People, I speak to you passionately and from the heart. The Sabres just went through a really tough month. It had nothing to do with multi-goal leads being blown. None. We saw it in the last two games. In the entirety of the month, they went 4-9-1. In six of those losses, they never had the lead to begin with. Yeah. And in three of the losses, they had a one-goal lead early in games, which is basically like not having a lead at all. That's the nature of the game and the lead changes. So we have to stop fixating. Yes, recency bias. We get it. It's happened in two straight games. This is not a play. In fact, did you know, Marty, after Don Granato said in his postgame last night, this happens to everybody. Third period leads are tough. It's the nature of the game. Wow. I went and fact checked after Don said that. 22 of the league's 32 teams have already lost a game, regulation or overtime, when leading after two. You know who's not part of it? the Buffalo Sabres. They are 8-0-0 when leading after two. One of the top five teams in the league, unblemished when leading after two. We need to stop the wrong, incorrect narrative that this is a season-long or ongoing problem for this team.
It's not. And problems like this often come in waves, right? All of a sudden, your power play can't score. Your penalty kill can't stop. You don't get a save. You can't score goals, but you're getting goaltending. They come in waves, right? But there is a thing this season, and we've talked about it, multi-goal comeback, right? There has been, in the month of November, 22 multi-goal comeback wins, including 5 3-plus goal comeback wins. So that's happening in the league right now, right? 89 comeback wins. This is all from NHL stats.
By the way, the Sabres have a couple of those already themselves. So what do I always say? Everything evens out for the most part.
It does. Now, you also have to get the eye test out there and why Don Granato wasn't happy after Tampa and why he seemed happier against Detroit is he felt that Tampa, the Sabres gave him room. They backed off. They backed off of Kucherov. They backed off of Stamkos. They backed off of Point. They backed off. It was on them. Last night, he said, gutsy effort. Great job by Andy. What a move by Quinn. I felt like the game was different. So the numbers, even though they suggest, well, you were up 5-3, you lost 6-5. You were up 4-1, you won 5-4, are very similar in that sense. The two games are completely different. Completely different for me.
Yeah, I think it's easier for the coach to speak positive after a win. That sounds obvious. I don't think they deserve to win the game based on how the last 10 minutes went last night. Like, the parade to the penalty box was undisciplined. It wasn't the fault of the officials. It was very poor decisions by your best defenseman.
They were bad penalties.
And to
bad
me, penalties. That alone, when you make bad decisions like that, I'm sorry, you don't deserve to win. So, and deserve is the wrong word. I get it. I'm just saying fate's not going to be on your... You have put fate in the hands of someone else when you choose to go down the path that they did. But I would be remiss if I didn't say, based on the penalty parade, that Opozo, Jokiharju, Cousins, Power, Gergensens, Fitzgerald, and Thompson were the late game saviors on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Making sure somehow, some way, along with Craig Anderson, who, by the way, has now played two straight games where he's come up with 41 saves in each.
Yeah.
They might want to help him a little bit more. Anyway, those are some of the reasons why they did get it ultimately to a shootout.
I do understand, and especially as a goalie's perspective, how you come out of this game feeling, we got it done, right? We killed these three penalties. We killed a 5-on-3 at the end of the game. Like we were given this challenge and we got it done. So yeah, undisciplined, bad penalties, tripping, cross-checking, whatever it was. Like, those are bad penalties. You can avoid those. But as a coach, as a goalie, as a defensive group, you're like, we got it done. And that, to me, is different than the Tampa game where you're like, ugh, like, we gave it up. We gave it up. Last night, there's a, Like, yes, it was a tough third period. Yes, we were up by three. But we got it done.
I know, but you're the smallest measurement of all time away from having the exact same feeling. We gave it up.
Yeah.
Like they hit the post before they had the multi-power plays there at the end. And, you know, on that play where Bertuzzi got hit in the hand and then Kopp put it off the post, like that could have been the death knell there. And honestly, for everything you said about the Detroit power play and the number of shot attempts and chances they had amidst their 0-for-7, I hated their power play at the end. I thought they were terrible.
They didn't attack. So, and the Sabres were backing off a little bit. That's why I was yelling at the TV. Yeah, I was like, my gosh, like you're gifting. But they did have some look. Now, also, I have to point out, was it Dylan Cousins that hit the short side reverse VH on Nedeljkovic and went off the post early in the third?
No, first shift of overtime.
Shift of overtime. You're
unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable. How that didn't go in is unbelievable.
When off the mask, off the post, and out the other way.
It's all we talk about right now because what we've been seeing from Skinner and Jack Hughes and all these guys around the league that shoot there on purpose. Sidney Crosby has done it forever. My goodness.
They pointed it out on the broadcast last night. Like, this is not an accident. This is exactly what he was trying to do. Skinner, early in the game, tried the same thing on the short side. Darren Pang goes, he likes to do that. Yes, his last two goals are exactly that, right? So I see the wheels turning in a good way. And so, there was post on Detroit, post on Buffalo. There was two posts in the shootout on Detroit, right? Like, ring the bell, like, save by the bell. Like, the Dylan Larkin move was special. He looks like he's going to do the back track, and boom, he pulls it to the forehand, hits the post. So Jack Quinn, what a move. I don't like players like J.J. Peterka, lefty, that goes wide to the left because he's actually carrying the puck on the outside. Jack Quinn, righty, goes to the right. He's actually carrying the puck on the outside. I think you limit your options, but when you have that move in your bag, I'm going to zip it and enjoy it. That's really how I felt after that.
Well, and I didn't like Buffalo's chances after the Peterka save because I felt, and I could be just wildly speculating here, that Nedeljkovic perhaps had done a pretty good pre-scout on Peterka.
Yeah,
he has used that in the AHL. He goes five hole or low to the, inside the post. And he handled that one with such confidence. I was like, ooh, he's probably got a book on everything else that's coming here. Now, that's no guarantee for success. But then to get the good fortune of having consecutive posts against your own goaltender and, the most impressive thing about Quinn's goal is his ability to stay on the puck. Like, he doesn't have Tage Thompson's reach.
Yeah.
Most guys with the balance, the sheer physics of the play, how far you have gone to your left and the play all of a sudden becoming agonizingly slow yet fast in the moment, if that makes any sense. It is so hard to hang on to the puck the way Quinn did to get it around him when you aren't blessed with the extra wingspan that a guy like Thompson or a Malkin or a Mario or whoever, right? Like, and that's so impressive. So impressive by Quinn.
There's a great picture that the Sabres posted again on Instagram, Twitter, whatnot, on their social of Quinn right before the move to his right, where he plants his left skate and the snow is up in the air. This is like how hard it is. Like, you can't just think, I'm just going to go and no, he made a hard cut. That would be like if you're watching football and you're like, oh, you just broke somebody's ankle, right, by making that cut and the guy falls down. That was a hard cut, a reach, and a tuck. Now, Ronald on Twitter this morning asked me, like, he felt like Nedeljkovic tried to trip Quinn. When he saw that he was beat, he extended his arm into the legs of Quinn. I didn't feel that it was that much. And then I watched it again. And I'm like, well, maybe there's a little bit. It didn't matter. It was in. That's a hard call for a referee to say. And then so he was asking me, what happens if there's a foul on the penalty shot on the shootout? Yep. Is it an awarded goal? No, it wouldn't be an awarded goal. If they feel like there was a tripping or a foul on the play and there's no goal, they would redo the attempt. The only way they are going to allow the goal is if the goalie throws a stick or any part of his equipment, like Dom Hasek used to do, throwing the blocker. Yep. That's an awarded goal. But a foul, like if I clip you in the face, accidentally, but still it's a high stick and you lose the puck, you get to redo your attempt. So that was a question.
It can happen multiple times. That's the funny part in the rule book. Like,
rule 24, go read it. It's interesting. The first time is a redo. The second time is a redo and I think it may be like a misconduct, which doesn't matter, right? Because you're the goalie, a 10-minute misconduct, somebody goes to the box or a shootout, doesn't matter. I think the third time is a game misconduct. And so now you're out of the game. Another goalie has to come in, but the player has to redo it every single time.
What did you think the way overtime ended? Darlene got a cross check there at the buzzer with Kopp. Remember they were sour with the Red Wings trying to put it into the empty net after the buzzer. in the overtime, and that's what caused that scrum there?
I usually I'm the first one to notice these things. Like, oh, I didn't think it was bad. Like, Anderson comes out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I know it's after the buzzer, but Anderson read the, again, it goes back to our situation with the clock, right?
Yeah,
knowing that there's only 2 seconds left. Anderson came out and was like, I'm the soccer goalie. I'm going to come out at you. And then he slid the puck in the net, whatever. I thought it was Dahlin's right now. His leadership to say, we're not going to put up with that, you know, and I like that. I like that Dahlin and Thompson and Samuels, it was Thompson and Dahlin that were involved in it mostly. And it was great.
Safe to say Anderson knew how much time was on the clock. He was in the faceoff circle by the time the guy walked around him.
Absolutely. And that's great. I love that. I love that. That to me is hockey IQ, and we know, we see it from Anderson. He's thinking, and people are going to say, how do you look at the clock? No, you look at the clock maybe with 9 seconds, but then you have your internal clock, 8, 7, mm-hmm. 6, and you're moving 5, 4, 3. Oh, passes across 1. You're like, I'm going. Like, he doesn't have time, right?
It works in 31 of the league's 32 rinks, just not LA. So,
well, that was a
one. Because you don't know if anybody has inadvertently hit pause for a second or two. That's the point here. So
that was a tough one in LA the other night, but nothing.
A lot
happened.
Of tough things in LA. We're going to talk to Darren Dreger about that, our hockey insider. Jack Quinn, 3-for-6 as an Amerk in shootouts, now 1-for-1 in his NHL career. So I'll take 4-for-7 and that percentage for the entirety of his career. That will leave him 20 years from now as one of the greatest shootout performers of all time.
If he kept it up with four, if he ends up 40-for-70, I mean, that is Alex awesome. Kotely kind of like success.
Oh,
and Thomas Vanek like success in shootout.
Yeah, it's the, you know, again, even this is ridiculous, but sometimes we focus on it. It's a great visual for the television side. How good was the Selly? Look at me. I know he's not saying that, but that's what it's like. Come on, boys. Look at me. This was amazing. And I'm so happy for him because as Razor was telling us yesterday, and I have to admit, like when I asked the question, I was kind of thinking Razor might go Jack Quinn, but if he surprised me with somebody else, as far as who he's been seeing kind of get it and get more comfortable as a pro and just, you know, all the little things that can help a rookie player in the NHL. I was just really glad for Jack to see it turn out that way.
Yeah. I was really glad for him. And I'm glad that Don Granato went Tage, Peterka and Jack Quinn, right? Mm-hmm. Like Dylan Cousins would have probably been a good feel too. Like here's a guy that's feeling it and let's put him in there. Right. But to be able to go with Peterka and Quinn, and he said after the game, he says they were going, I felt very confident putting them in the shootout. So I like that. I always want to know though, who would have been the fourth, right?
I think it would have been Cousins for sure.
I think Cousins and Dahlin would have been fourth and fifth. Like it would have been like those two next. And I like that you have options. You have a lot of options now with guys that have really, really good hands and can surprise you in a shootout.
Well, 2/3 of the Cousins line has never faced the Avalanche before. That changes tonight. Georgiev was first off the ice at morning skate for Colorado, so we're expecting to see him. He is 4-2 lifetime against Buffalo, but of course those games happen as a member of the New York Rangers. We will get confirmation later today on any lineup changes for Buffalo. Don Granato speaks closer to 5:30 after no morning skate today. Easy anticipation would be that Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is back in goal after Anderson's 41 saves in a win last night. Saves are not being made in every market, specifically LA. Darren Dreger addresses that and more as we continue Sabres Live after this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Are we having fun yet, Marty?
Yeah, lots of fun.
You want to tell them how much fun we're having?
Yeah, because we're trying to get Dregs to join us right now, but it's not working. So I'm texting Dregs right now that Jeff will text him a phone number. You a phone number to call in. Because we're trying to get this technology sometimes doesn't work, right? That's the way it is.
Why don't you answer Taro says on Twitter, who says that Darlene took a penalty at the end of overtime, so I believe he's ineligible for the shootout.
No, that's not right. That's not true.
It's a good question, though, because I don't think a lot of I don't think a lot of people know, because you don't actually see it often, and it's a good follow up to what we were discussing at the end of the last segment.
International hockey, world championship, world juniors, Olympics. That is true. If you are in the box at the end of the game, or if you take a penalty at the end of the overtime period, you cannot partake in the shootout. Kind of like soccer, right? If you're red carded, you can't kick in the penalty kicks at the end. But in the NHL, that is not the case. I feel the NHL also kind of maybe protected themselves against teams that would say, oh, look, Connor McDavid is on the ice at the end of 3-on-3. Buzzer goes. Let's cross check. And then let's try to bait him into taking a penalty so they don't partake in the shootout. And so for that reason, I like that players can be in the shootout unless obviously they got a game misconduct and got kicked out of the game. But if you just have a minor penalty, you can partake in the shootout.
Allow me to look at it from the other side with the exact example you just used. You can hack and hack and hack at Connor McDavid, and there's no penalty. Like, yeah, you get 2 minutes, but you're still allowed to lead off the shootout. I think it's wrong. Yeah. I think if you are in the box, you should not be able to partake in the shootout.
Okay, well, who's hacking at Connor McDavid? It's usually like the
probably
guy that
everybody, because nobody
shootout
can keep up with him.
Well, no, but I'm just saying it's the guy that won't go in the shootout. But okay,
what
so
are you
let's
talking about? You're Brad Marchand is not going to try to incite Connor McDavid into something. Marty, that's really not a good example.
I understand, but Dregs is on the phone and we don't want to make him wait anymore. We'll debate that at some point. So Dregs, did you hear our little debate going on right now?
No, we don't want to talk about the debate. We want to get to LA and Cal Peterson. Yeah. What's happening?
I caught the tail end of it, but I was enjoying a little bit of the debate because it distracted me from my technical difficulties, which we're experiencing here early this afternoon.
And still are, unfortunately. So I don't know about you, Marty, but I can barely hear him, which I'm guessing for our audience isn't great.
No, I can hear him good. Okay. I don't know if it's just coming through you guys, but I can hear him good. What's going on with Cal Peterson? Like, I know it was a tough night against Seattle. They didn't waive him just because of that game, but 2 years left at $5 million. What do you hear and what's happening with him?
Yeah, I mean, it was a surprise to, I think, pretty much everyone. Not necessarily when you look at it purely from a goaltending perspective, and that's obviously what Rob Blake and the Los Angeles Kings are doing here. Cal Peterson has struggled mightily. He's not the only one in that category across the National Hockey League. Elvis Merlikins, pretty much every goaltender. I mean, Igor Shesterkin, still in the elite for me, said he was ashamed after a performance recently. So the goaltending union is taking a bit of a hit here. But it's also about Los Angeles, you know, trying to move a contract that they don't like in the moment. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that plays out via waivers. But as is the case with basically every player that's put on waivers, unless it's a depth player that you know there isn't going to be a market for, you don't just randomly put a player on waivers. So it's pretty clear to me that Rob Blake and the LA Kings have at least tried to engage in conversation with other clubs about the interest that there may or may not be in Cal Peterson. And it doesn't seem like there is at this stage. So they're taking a flyer on him and putting him on waivers and see what comes of it.
Do we think anyone's going to make a claim?
I don't. You know, again, no guarantee that the salary cap is going up to $4.5 million, which it may. And if it doesn't, it remains a flat cap, a $1 million bump. Teams are going to continue to just hold on tight. Hey, look, if you knew you were getting a goaltender who was on the cusp of potentially turning around, maybe you do. But it feels like if you're going to do that, you would have done it via trade, and you would have tried to move an asset in a dollar-in, dollar-out type of formula instead. But I've been surprised by lesser stories, so we'll keep an eye on it.
So... No, go ahead, Duffer.
Jessica was going to say that, you know, in Ontario, where the Kings Farm Club plays, the Ontario Reign, you have Phoenix Copley, veteran, and 2017 third-round pick Matthew Villalta, who's not played yet in the NHL but has progressed nicely in this his fourth season, was actually pretty good last year and has decent numbers this year. It's just, you know, with John Quick not setting the world on fire and the potential to either lose by choice and or send Peterson to the AHL, like it's not the prettiest picture there, Dregs, for their goaltending situation.
No, it's not, Duffer. And let's not forget that, you know, the reason that the Kings traded Jack Campbell to the Toronto Maple Leafs was because they felt like Cal Peterson was going to be their goalie. And he was going to be the guy that was, you know, first of all, going to work in tandem with Jonathan Quick, but then take over the starter's role. So, this is as big a disappointment, I think, as you're going to get from a goaltending standpoint. But I'm still curious what the end game is here, you know, and how active Rob Blake and company are potentially going to be. I've heard, and I'm not trying to connect two teams here to a trade scenario, but it was thrown out at me last week when Vancouver was continuing to flounder a little bit. The Canucks have been better of late, but in fact, Demko has bounced, but you know, a team suggested that maybe the LA Kings would take a run at Thatcher Demko if he were a player that could be in play at some point between now and March 3rd. Caught my attention, again, for record. I'm not connecting those two teams, but at the time I went, well, that's a bit weird. And, you know, full disclosure, I don't analyze goaltenders for a living, and I didn't pay close attention to what was going on in L.A., aside from the fact that Cal Peterson wasn't playing very well when given the opportunity and given Jonathan Quick a break. So now that I rewind and go back to that conversation with that NHL exec, it kind of makes some sense.
Now, Thatcher Demko's had a tough 20 games this year, right? But he was really good last season. Cal Peterson has been bad for a year and a half now. So that's a big difference in the two, in my analysis of them anyway. So I don't think you could do a clean swap. And obviously, if you put Thatcher Demko on waivers, he doesn't go through waivers. Cal Peterson will. So that's a big difference there as well. Maybe switch gear. Jacob Chychrun, that's a big one. Again, like when you look at players that could be on the move and, significant dollars, but a pretty good contract to be absorbing and a really good player.
Yeah.
Where are we on Jacob Chychrun? How quick will that happen? Because it's been a year and a half now, and it's like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Well, we're still in the same place that we were a year and a half ago.
And I think it would have happened, Marty, if not for the injury. And then the setback following the injury of Jake Chychrun was close to coming back to the NHL, because at that point, maybe he would feel like he had a little bit more leverage or currency to one more time, go to the Coyotes, to Bill Armstrong, and say, okay, I've tried to play nice here. I've tried to be respectful. You know what my trade wishes are. Like, where are we here? And then it comes down to a business decision. And look, it's up to Bill Armstrong to manage his commodities, his assets. And Jake Chychrun is one, as he sees fit, as to what is best for the Arizona Coyotes moving forward. And Bill Armstrong obviously believes that what he has in the contract of Jake Chychrun isn't Chris. And I think that that's fair. It might be a little unfair for Jake Chychrun, who doesn't want to be part of a rebuild with the Arizona Coyotes, but if you believe you've got an asset, in this case Chychrun, that can bring you back two first-round picks and multiple assets, a package of four or five assets, and you're convinced, even though you've gone through the offseason, you didn't get what you needed at the draft or prior to the trade deadline, didn't get what you need to the offseason, and then you had the injury situation, where is the sure thing that you're going to get it with a contract slowly but surely being chewed back? So there's a bit of risk here from Arizona's perspective, but they don't see it that way. They still think Chychrun is worth what they're asking.
So with Arizona in Los Angeles tonight, why don't the two sides just get the deal done? And as a way of sweetening it from Arizona's perspective, because you know they want the haul that you're talking about, perhaps they take Cal Peterson off of LA's hands, then form the perfect right-handed goaltending tandem of Vemelka and Peterson, both of whom will rise to Vezina and Jennings Trophy status in the next couple of years. Probably not before they actually have a new rink in Tempe, but nonetheless, it could be a fun story. But anyway, in all seriousness,
fiction.
Aren't the Kings like the obvious suitor here for Chychrun? So just take him while he's actually in your building tonight.
Yeah. They've been among the obvious suitors, Duffer. You're not wrong on that. But Rob Blake is no different than every other general manager who has an interest. And there are multiple. You know this. There's too much asset to pay. And, Blake has made it publicly known that, he sees the window somewhat closing. And that's obvious when you look at Quick and you look at Kopitar and, some of the pieces that they have. But he's acknowledged that he's a big game hunter. Chychrun would fit into that qualification, but so might Patrick Kane, right? Or a piece like that. So yeah. I feel it's a little bit early for all parties here. Even though we can connect the dots and we can make sense of it logistically, if you're not willing to pay the price or you're a little apprehensive because you're thinking, okay, well, I'd like to add Chychrun because he's a quality defenseman and the cost fit is there, but what if Patrick Kane actually decides he wants to leave Chicago? I'd like to be a horse in that race too. So it is a little tricky for the buyers this time of year.
Yeah. So here's the thing too. And I'm going to link like what happened with Cal Peterson. They gave him a contract a year early, right? They didn't have to give him a contract in September of 2021, but they did. He still had a year left. And then the 3 year at $5 million started to kick in this year. That's a tough one. Sabres did the same thing with Tage Thompson, Matias Samuelsson. It looks to be like, wow, they did the right thing. Dallas, They waited to sign Jason Robertson, but now they got Roope Ince done.
Yeah.
It's going to affect contracts. So are these, like, jumping in early for younger players a good thing to do? And Dallas did it with Roope Ince, but that's going to impact, you know, Larkin, Horvat, you mentioned on Insider Trading. And also down the line, like Dylan Cousins here in Buffalo.
And you know, the Montreal Canadiens have some guys coming up on deals, Cole Caulfield, et cetera, right? It could. I can tell you, let's go back to the Toronto Maple Leafs signing Auston Matthews to that five-year extension. There was outrage around NHL general managers' offices because they felt like when you've got such an obvious sure thing, which Auston Matthews at the time was and still is, you know, why don't you force them as best you can to take a longer term so that you control that player and you don't reset the market in a short period of time. And that's what's going to happen here, right? I mean, we're going to be talking about Matthews' contract in the very near future because they can address that situation as of July 1st. So how much did it influence the market? Don't know. But I know people around Montreal are looking at the Robertson deal, a four-year extension at $31 million with Dallas, and going, well, could that influence what Cole Caulfield and company look at from Montreal's standpoint? Robertson, I think, would have preferred a longer term. The Dallas Stars wanted a shorter term. So the compromise is the hybrid, and that's the 4 years. So all of these things come into play. But no different than Roope Ince. I mean, there you had the cross-section. Maybe Dallas looks at Roope Ince, and not that they see that he's a better asset than Jason Robertson, is just they felt more comfortable based on the average salary to get him locked up to a longer term at that point. So when these players, these good players, take these shorter terms, it 100% influences the market.
And the eventual number for Robertson, based on his current projection, will be attainable for Dallas after his current bridge is done, simply because of, you know, Jamie Benn and others being off the books by then. So it'll give them the flexibility. Trevor Zegras is one to keep in mind here too, when we're talking about Cole Caulfield and Dylan Cousins among this, you know, the group from the 2019 class, pardon me. And we'll obviously be watching with great interest. Still hard to believe that some of these guys, the Pasternaks, Larkins, Horvats of the world, haven't got their deals done. Dregs, thanks for fighting through the challenges of today, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Darren Dreger, hockey insider from TSN, back to wrap Sabres Live on a game day. It's Buffalo and Colorado tonight. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Abs and Sabres tonight, just a little bit of time here. In fact, less so than that. Marty, what do you expect tonight?
Well, the Avs are injured. They don't have Landeskog, Nabushkin. There's a lot of injuries. Nachushkin. What did I say?
Labushkin or some Labushkin. Reasonable.
He's not playing either.
Bo Byram, Helm, either. Rodriguez. The list goes on.
It goes on. It's still McKinnon and Makar, though, so you still have to be good. I don't know. Okay. I got to do my homework this afternoon.
All right. We'll see you tonight, folks.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.